Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Please take a seat. Happy BPW Day to all who celebrate. We're excited that today I think the sun brought a time when the people of this country were able to use their voice. You know, and oftentimes we find ourselves where elected officials are talking to people. But the great thing about election nights is that's actually a chance when people actually get to speak back. And I think there was a pretty resounding sound that was made yesterday. But it's also not lost, as we were just talking about it, on any of us, that we are now on day 36 of a federal government shutdown. That regardless of election victories that might have happened last night, or election results that might have happened last night, that we are now on day 36 where our federal workers are not working, or are working and not getting paid. That we are now in day 36 of something that is a completely unnecessary and frankly a deeply cruel process that this country is going through, where we're seeing furloughed employees, people who are having activated unemployment benefits, people who are literally checking in to work, but knowing that at the end of that process, there will be no paycheck for them. And also now hearing threats that there won't be back pay either. So the cruelty just doesn't stop. I know that that when we also saw for this past week, when we were watching things like food being now weaponized and being used as a prerequisite and a tool for negotiation, which I cannot think of something more barbaric than utilizing food as a negotiation tactic. It is why we are proud that in the state of Maryland, when we saw these actions taking place, and not to mention these illegal actions taking place, that we sued the federal government. And we were proud to say that we won the lawsuit that we had with our attorney general and joined dozens of other states to tell the federal government that you cannot use starvation as a tactic. It is illegal, and it is deeply, deeply inhumane. But now that we have seen, while the president is now saying that he will not follow that guidelines and will not pay the half, we have said that not only will we, again, go back and use all legal means to ensure that this is followed, that also in the state of Maryland, we cannot just sit back and watch this cruelty take place. And so it is why we have now authorized for a release of $62 million. That is going to go towards SNAP supports to ensure that the people of this state for the month of November will be fine, that they will not have to use as pawns in this larger and unnecessary political game that's taking place. But we also know that this is not the way that governance is supposed to happen, that we should not have to have emergency executive orders to make sure that people's food is not cut. We should not have to have emergency meetings amongst lawmakers to ensure that basic benefits and basic supports are being upheld. And so we are here today to call for the same things that we have called on before, and asking Washington, D.C. to end this unnecessary shutdown, to end this process where we are somehow saying that cutting people off of healthcare should be a prerequisite to making sure the federal government is open. This is, it's not just disturbing. It's embarrassing. It's something as a country that we should not be here. It's something that the entire country is watching and realizing that if Washington cannot fix its brokenness, if Washington cannot fix its processes, that the need for each and every one of us to be able to show a certain measure of humanity to try to fill that hole is not just required, but also knowing that there is no state that can make up for when the federal government just decides to leave everybody else on their own. And so our ask is that once again, end this shutdown, get back to work, make sure we're not attacking people's health care. And let's try to show people that the foundation that this country is built on and the thing that we fight for every single day for the basic fabric of American society is one that continues to be worth fighting for. And so with that, now that I got that off my chest, I want to turn it over to the secretary. And good morning, and we'll begin with the business of the day.
Good morning, Governor. Good morning to you, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. There are 14 items on the secretary's agenda this morning, and 3 reports are merged procurements. And happy to assist with answering any questions.
Great. Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. I'd like to first highlight item 7. And I'm very excited about this. It's a request from the Department of Natural Resources to approve the naming of the Howard Heritage Trail to the Freedmen's State Historical Park in order of the Howard family. And for those who might not be aware, the Enoch George Howard was a Maryland man who was born into slavery in the early 1800s. He ended up becoming a very gifted businessman. He developed a talent for growing crops, and he convinced his plantation owner to let him grow and sell his own crops. And eventually Howard raised enough money to emancipate himself, his wife, and also his children. And during the Civil War, Howard purchased a plantation house where he had been enslaved. And he went on to purchase nearly 600 additional acres of land. And he used that land to start a school for Black children. He used that land to establish a church. He used that land to help other Black families establish homes nearby. And so we saw someone who was not just a visionary, but someone who was a true pillar for the larger community. And in fact, his daughter, Martha Elizabeth Howard Murphy, you might know the Murphy name, also helped her husband to launch the Afro-American newspapers, the oldest African-American newspaper chain that is still thriving to this day. This new trail, which is cradled in the Freedmen's State Historical Park in northern Montgomery County, is a true testament to that legacy, and it honors that legacy. Because once fully complete, the Freedmen's State Historical Park and the Howard Heritage Trail will serve as a testament to the remarkable achievements of Enoch George Howard, his family, and also the journey that they led, and the fact that they made this state a better place. And we're deeply grateful and excited for the work that we're seeing within DNR, and the work that we're seeing to make this happen. With that, is there any further discussion on the secretary's agenda?
No.
May I have a motion to approve the secretary's agenda?
Motion to approve the secretary's agenda.
And is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. Speaking of DNR, we will proceed with Department of Natural Resources, Secretary Kurtz. Again, thank you so much for your leadership on that. Congratulations and good morning.
Thank you. Yeah, much appreciated. Mr. Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer, for the record, Josh Kurtz, Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources. Excited to be here today to present 9 items for you all to consider. I'm available, and so is my staff, to answer any questions you may have.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Do we have any questions for DNR agenda? May I have a motion to approve the DNR agenda?
Motion to approve the DNR agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. Next up, University System of Maryland, Mr. Hickey. Good morning.
Morning, Governor, Mr. Treasurer, Madam Comptroller. Tom Hickey representing University System of Maryland. There are 4 items for your consideration. Happy to answer any questions.
Is there any discussion on the USM agenda? May I have a motion to approve the USM agenda?
Motion to approve the USM agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thanks so much, Mr. Hickey. We will now move on to the MDOT agenda. Mr. Donson, good morning.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, my name is Valerie Radomski, Chief Procurement Officer for the Maryland Department of Transportation. Today, we are presenting 15 agenda items for your consideration, and we have representatives available to answer any questions you may have.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thanks, Mr. Radomski. And I understand we have 2 speaker requests for item 13. And that's a request from the Secretary's office to use the expedited procurement method to secure staffing resources to rectify nearly 10,000 Maryland disadvantaged business enterprises to comply with the recent updates that are being made to federal regulations. In the interest of time, I would just ask the speakers keep their comments to no more than 3 minutes. And Secretary Gonch might ask you to serve as timekeeper on that. First, we'd like to recognize Mike Sakata. Who is representing the Maryland Transportation Builders Association And who's just speaking in support of this item. Mike, good morning. Good to see you again.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
All right. Good morning, Governor Moore, Comptroller Learman, and Treasurer Davis. For the record, my name is Michael Staccato, President and CEO of Maryland Transportation Builders and Materials Association. We represent more than 250 prime MBE, DBE firms who employ over 150,000 workers who build and maintain the infrastructure here that connects our communities. And as a first-generation American whose parents both own small businesses, I've seen firsthand how opportunity and hard work can build stronger families and stronger communities. That experience drives my commitment to ensuring Maryland's policies give every business, large or small, a fair chance to compete and succeed. I'm here in support, as our association is in support of Agenda Item 13EX, approving funding for this USDOT, and it forced upon us, you know, USDOT's decertification of these firms. So we're obviously in support of this, and it's a vital step to keep Maryland's small and minority firms competitive for federally funded projects. But funding alone isn't enough. Governor Moore's executive order on project labor agreements rightly emphasizes fairness, transparency, and a pro-Maryland approach to infrastructure investment. It sets an important framework to make sure states' policies strengthen, not limit competition, participation, and opportunity for Maryland workers and businesses. When that balance isn't maintained and the consequences are real, fewer local jobs, lost tax revenue, and reduced opportunity for Maryland's local, small, women and minority-owned firms. We can't afford that, especially when the federal government uncertainty is already creating challenges for these businesses. So I respectfully urge the board to support this program and continue reinforcing policies that keep Maryland jobs, careers, and tax dollars here at home. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael. Thank you so much. I'd also like to recognize Dee Dee Strum, representing Strum Contracting Company, who joins us in person. Good morning. It's good to see you again.
Good morning. Good morning, Governor Moore, Comptroller Learman, and Treasurer Davis. For the record, my name is Dee Dee Strum, representing Strum Contracting Company in Baltimore. We are a small minority and family-owned business with more than 40 years of commercial contracting experience in Maryland. I previously served as CEO of ND Strum Housing Services, was the 7th national president of the National Coalition of 100 Black Women Incorporated, and I currently serve as the CEO of Blacks of the Chesapeake Foundation right here in Annapolis, Maryland. I am here in support of Agenda Item 13EX funding the U.S. Department of Transportation DBE and the Airport Concession DBE certification program, an important step to keep small and minority-owned firms certified and competitive. Governor Moore's executive order on project labor agreements reflects a strong commitment to fairness, transparency, and opportunity for Maryland workers and businesses. I fully support that vision, but as these policies are implemented, it is important to make sure that they don't unintentionally exclude local firms or send work and paychecks out of state. For many of us, the difference between inclusion and exclusion comes down to access. When Maryland firms can compete, those contracts create local jobs, support small suppliers, strengthen the families and the communities where we live, work, and worship. I urge the board to uphold open, fair, and competitive procurement policies that keep Maryland dollars, Maryland jobs, and Maryland opportunities right here at home. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Governor, if I can, Mike, please, let me start there. And I don't know if this is better for Valerie or not. The second half of your statement, and it's sort of piggyback or Ms. Grimes' comments piggybacked off of that as well. You mentioned the executive order, and I remember that as I like to say, everybody was a little ticked off, so the governor probably got it right. But it sounds like something else has occurred. What are we talking about?
Recent implementation of something on the 695 flyover project that frankly puts forces the agency to send jobs out of state. And I think that's our main issue, almost 80% of this.
What do you mean by that? I guess that's what I'm trying to get to. It's sending jobs out of state. What's going on that I'm not getting?
Contract written that says they are
getting, they're only required to have a certain amount of Maryland workers here. And so when you have projects or contract like that, that says something that you're only required to have 20% in the state, and you're sending, contractors, you know, they work by handshake. They work by walking across, you know, looking you across the table. But, and we don't normally, you know, stick to the contract, but at some point you look at this contract and the contract says you're only required to have 20% Maryland workers here. Generally, that's what they're going to eventually, you're going to eventually see an influx of out-of-state workers coming into Maryland to work on these projects.
Why, the cheaper, or why would they, even if the contract only requires 20% of Maryland workers, why would a business, for example, why would they lean towards out-of-state workers as opposed to in-state workers who are already here and those kinds of things?
Specifically because a preseason aspect of the contract requires them to be union. In a state like Maryland, where it's 90% non-union contractors, when you have a contract written that says you can bring these 80% contractors out of state, essentially that's what you're doing. You're bringing out-of-state workers to work on these projects that are required to be union.
And they're non-union is what you're saying? Or am I messing that
up? No, they're union companies coming from out-of-state to Maryland. So, but if you look at the inventory in Maryland, we got 90% of non-union workers here. And that's that's what we're seeing.
It's a little chicken and egg, right? In order to have more union workers in Maryland, don't we have to have union contracts so that unions can grow?
Well, but at the end of the day, when you have a workforce that has built 404, Woodrow Wilson Bridge, ICC, of merit shop contractors, yes, it's a chicken and egg, but at the end of the day, this is what we have in inventory. Inventory in Maryland is, by and large, open shop.
Do you think inventory is static and can never change?
No, it can obviously change as it flows. Sure, but that's what we have now. I mean, I've been here in the industry for 20 plus years. It actually, union participation hasn't gone up, it's gone down. So yes, it has changed. It's actually changed the opposite.
Hasn't it gone down in part because of state requirements? Actually, don't even answer that. How is that relevant to this agenda item?
Well, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because of, we're promoting funding for DBEs and MBEs. At the same time, we're having policies that don't support that. So I just want the policies and funding to go hand in hand.
I guess I disagree on that fundamentally, but I don't think it's relevant to this item either. We generally hear comments that are directly on point about items.
Let me close with this. Because of what you're saying about the inventory, how are minority contractors impacted by this? Are the state's MBEs?
I think
generally minority contractors and non-union contractors. I'd also like to speak to the question that you raised about why would they bring workers in from out of state? They'll bring workers in from out of state, and this is almost in any form of business, just to keep their workforce working. And because they make commitments to their union membership that they will keep them working, that's who their first obligation is to. And so if they can come in, cross the border from a neighboring state, bring them in, that's who they're going to go to first. But again, most of the minority women-owned businesses, veteran-owned businesses are not union shops. And so if they only have to do 20%, then they're probably only going to do 20%, which means 2 out of 10 jobs versus 8 out of 10 jobs or some higher number.
Thank you.
I don't have any more questions.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
I do want to just emphasize how irresponsible this interim rule is, which has totally upended the DBE and ACDBE programs, resulting in the immediate invalidation of all existing DBE and ACDBE certifications and really burdening every state. Every state now has to go through and create, recertify, reevaluate all of these firms on a case-by-case basis. And I'm certainly deeply concerned that the disruption to this framework will yield significant impacts, not just here in Maryland, but truly across the country. Some of my fellow state financial officers and I across the country have sent in a letter and comment to USDOT. We're really concerned that about what this will mean for our economies, for our businesses, because for more than 40 years since its establishment, the DBE program has successfully provided small businesses owned and controlled by socially and economically disadvantaged individuals with really meaningful opportunities to compete for federally funded transportation contracts, in turn generating trillions of dollars in economic activity while enabling more than 53,000 DBE and ACDBE firms to employ over 500,000 Americans. So now with this interim final rule's immediate implementation, without consultation or analysis with any state departments of transportation, it really threatens to reverse decades of progress and to destabilize state financial management of federally funded projects. I also want to encourage all of our contractors who are working with DBEs and ACDBEs, like our airport concessionaire and others, to fulfill the commitments that they made to this board and to our state, regardless of what is on paper. There is the spirit of the law and the letter, and we want to make sure that we are continuing to do this. And my agency looks forward to working with MDOT, DOSM, and others to ensure that we can ensure that these DBEs and ACDBEs are recertified as quickly as possible so that we remain in compliance with federal law while also upholding our commitment to our MBEs, our DBEs, and our ACDBEs. Thanks.
Thank you. I can, Governor. Not to put too fine a point on it, I think the comptroller did an excellent job, as did you earlier. But again, see, it's funny, and I guess it's just me being, you hear a lot of folks, particularly on Wall Street, they want to opine on how we're governing the state. So you do reserves, talk about reserves and the economy and so forth. But time and again, we're sitting here batting away federal action, whether it's grants and monies that are due to states or now our business community, MBEs, just randomly changing the rules and things of that nature. But we still have our responsibility to the citizens of Maryland. We still have to be wise stewards of the people's money, and we still have to be accountable to those who invest here. And trying to govern, and I won't speak for the governor, but trying to govern, and certainly as one of the fiscal officers, trying to keep this ship steady in the face of these treacherous waters is not easy. But we'll be faced with the questions: well, why is this going on, or why are you handling that? And it's not coming. It's not state generated. It's not actions that we've taken that have, sort of destabilized the economy. And if I can, not to get too deep into yesterday, but I think what we're seeing and what we're hearing is the voices of the people who are also tired and fed up with the uncertainty and the chaos and things that are going on. So all I'm really saying is, for those, and I guess I'm speaking of Wall Street, when you start calling my office and wanting to know why this is occurring or why the state has to do that, I want them to also think why we're doing those as well. It's certainly not as a result of any actions that we've taken that are backfiring. Rather, it's us being reactionary, in which we have no choice but to be reactionary. So, now that I got that off my chest,
no, keep going. That's right. Any other comments on the MDOT agenda?
Nope.
Okay. May I have a motion to approve the MDOT agenda?
Motion to approve the MDOT agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thanks, Mr. Donaldson. Thank you. We'll conclude with the DGS agenda. Secretary Charger, good morning.
Morning, sir. Mr. Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer, for the record, I'm the Chief Charter Secretary of the Maryland Department of General Services. Today, the department is presenting 55 items in our agenda. We do have one hand carry item from the Department of Health for a bed registry and referral system, which is a state-of-the-art application to provide a statewide bed registry and referral system through which healthcare providers will be able to identify and access available inpatient as well as outpatient mental health and substance use disorder services. We are withdrawing one item today in our agenda, that's item 43 IT. Our agenda does feature 28 capital grants and loans totaling more than $22 million. Did want to highlight one in particular, and that's item 14 CGL, which provides $1 million to the Maryland National Park and Planning Commission for the Lake Arbor Park project for the planning, design, construction, and site improvements of the park, which is an adaptive reuse of a 127-acre Lake Arbor golf course. As we continue to keep an eye on minority business participation, our agenda does include four contract options to certified minority business totaling more than $2.5 million. And we have ADC representatives here to answer any questions you may have.
Can I just two quick questions? Can you go back to the Lake Arbor project? I think I missed that when I was going through it. And that's like a mile from the house. So
item 14 CGL.
What is it?
14 CGL.
It's good. It's exciting.
It is.
Great. It is.
You know that Senator Benson and Delegate Lewis, and even before Delegate Barron, so many people have been working on that.
Yeah, it's been sitting vacant.
Yeah, a long time.
Yeah, and I know that they've been anxiously awaiting for something to occur there. So that is good news.
So you're a yes vote.
Secondly, I need some heat, Mr. Secretary. Yes. Sitting there freezing me out in the office. Yes. I know you've been good steward with people's money, but turn the heat on.
Yeah.
Mr. will take care of you.
I did turn my a device on yesterday in my office, and instead of blowing out cold air, and I was like, no!
It's happening fast. It's happening fast.
Thank
you, Mr. Secretary. In addition to hearing a resounding yes on item 14, I also want to highlight items 9 and 10, which are a request to award a collective $4 million capital grant funding to Frederick County for improvements to the county's public safety and the county's cyber infrastructure. The Frederick County Interagency Information Technology Division really is a very powerful unit of government and a very important unit of government, because it provides really just essential day-to-day operations to all the various kind of departments. You really see how the tentacles are really touching every single aspect of what's happening over in Frederick County. And the interagency IT division supports just a wide range of department functions to include mapping GIS map data and preserving digital capacities by the county that really touches every single aspect of how the county works. And the division plays a key role in leveraging technology to deliver all these government services, and not just effectively, but also just really delivering them in a very cost-effective way. And to support their work, items 9 and 10 will place a fully integrated public safety communication center at their facility in the city of Frederick. And this is going to provide space for core public safety communications infrastructure for their new 911 center, by enabling cybersecurity and physical security to actually have a consolidated roof. I'd also like to just take a moment to briefly highlight item 28, which is a request from the Department of Health to award $2.1 million capital grant to Healthport Incorporated. And this is for the construction of a facility that is serving the Eastern Shore and to provide health services to some of the shore's most vulnerable individuals. Healthport is a special nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a broad array of services designed to assist people recovering from severe mental illness and also co-occurring substance use disorders. And their program really focuses on the social determinants of health for each of their members, and that includes psychiatric care, medication management, pharmacy services, vocational development and assistance. So really a broad swath of supports for people who need and deserve a champion inside that work. The Department of Health, through the Community Health Facilities Grant Program, has partnered with Healthport over multiple funding years to expand this critical needed rehabilitation services, because it's going to not just serve one individual area. We're talking about services that will be touched in Somerset and Wacomico and also in Worcester counties. So a tri-county support system that we think is important. And this $2.1 million investment to construct this new facility in Salisbury is going to help to address the programming and the accessibility that the current facility we know is going to need support to be able to make and maintain. And so this will allow us to touch and allow them to touch an additional 200 individuals, 200 Marylanders with outpatient services at any given time. So we're excited about this investment and really grateful for the thoughtfulness that went into it. I'm sorry, Madam Comptroller.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, a really important projects. I also wanted to, I know you highlighted item 55 for MDH for the implementation of the web-based behavioral health capacity tracking system. And I wanted to say how important this legislation is. I was proud to support the legislation that, you know, mandated this in 2020. And also want to just give a shout out to Chairwoman of Health and Government Operations, Delegate Jocelyn Kenya Melnick, who's really been a tireless advocate on this issue, and thank her for all her work. I had the opportunity to tour the construction site of the Intergenerational Center at Item 5 CGL with their Executive Director, Dave Kimkoff, recently. It's a really exciting new facility, which will open in the spring, and will really be serving people of all ages and entire families in one location. There'll be Head Start programs, community kitchens, a state-of-the-art rec center, behavioral health and substance abuse services, and more. So this project would not be possible without the support of the state, and I'm grateful that it is continuing and excited for the ribbon cutting and to see the services that it can offer to people in the region. Thanks so much. A number of really exciting projects today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And 55 IT is a really big deal, and thank you for your leadership on that. It's a really big deal.
Great.
Any other comments on the DGS agenda? No. May I have a motion to approve the DGS agenda?
Motion to approve the DGS agenda.
Is there a second? Outstanding. Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. Well, that concludes today's meeting of the Board of Public Works. Next meeting is November 19th. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks.